is Total Access Show.
Touchdown, Tampa Bay!
On your home for the Buccaneers, 620 WDAE and US 103.5. Here's your host, Dave Moore.
Welcome to the Total Access Show, and it's doom and gloom Monday. Fortunately for me, I have one of the veteran guys who certainly had a share of wins and losses without getting into anything, without bringing you in first along Barrett Root, number 51. 9 tackles yesterday. Busy day yesterday.
Yeah. You know, I saw we only had like 46 plays. So it was one of those days. It was kind of a strange feeling. But, you know, with Pittsburgh, it's probably been the same way for about 15 years now. You can't be trailing those guys. They're probably the best front runner in football, meaning that when they get a lead, they don't give it up. And even when you fall behind 2 touchdowns early, it makes for a long day because they're about as good as it gets at maintaining leads and holding on to leads. So we kind of dug ourselves a hole early, but you know, it was a lot of kind of just missed opportunities more than anything. And you know, we're not depressed by this game, but just more than anything, you know, a little frustrated and kind of more excited to get back out and play more than anything.
All right, the hardest thing now is you have to wait through the bye week to be able to do it. You know, there's nothing worse than having a bad taste in your mouth and you got the light right there. You know, 7 days later, you're playing, and now you guys have to go through a weekend off and
you probably couldn't draw up a worse bye week for anybody because, you know, we have a
even
bad
if you
long,
did win, it's a yeah, bad time to
yeah,
have a bye
it's
week.
It's a terrible time to have a bye week. I was actually saying earlier that I think the NFL everybody should have a bye week 9. Like, basically make every
– from 7 to 9. Anyway.
Yeah. Or then have a couple teams play each week and just to, you know, fill the fans' needs. But, you know, for some teams to have a bye week 3 and some teams week 9, you know, that's not really fair because, I mean, everybody still feels good now. You know, you don't want to bye when you're still feeling good. You want to bye when your body's a little bit worn out and, you know, you need a little break. So, yeah, combine that with the fact we had a bad loss. It's not a great bye week.
Well, what if Raheem, did you guys have – you didn't have, obviously, victory Monday like you had last week. Yeah. But did you get together as a team today?
No, today was kind of just come in and, you know, the guys who are – you know.
But is that because of the bye week?
Yeah, because of the bye week. Okay. So we're going to work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday this week from what I know. And, you know, kind of just do some, you know, reviewing a little bit of the last game and, you know, kind of just going over our stuff this week. That's kind of what the bye is usually for, is the combination, get healthy and – you know, kind of improve on some of our individual and you know, defensive and offensive, you know, techniques. So it'll be just kind of an improvement week and hopefully a week where we can get a few guys healthy if they are a little bit banged up.
Unlike a normal Monday where you come in, and what do you have to do on a normal Monday?
Well,
you don't have a bye.
For me, I got a pretty set schedule. I always run. I always lift. I always sit in the cold tub, and I've been doing the steam room lately too. So I have a pretty set schedule. And then, you know, if we do
this ad, as you get older,
yeah,
from experience, you just start adding, your days just get longer.
Yeah. So
maintenance.
And usually you got to watch film too. Today, you know, we didn't have a meeting today, so I watch film on my own. Most guys watch film on their own too, just because, you know, curiosity. And most guys that play, you kind of, good or bad, you always kind of stay up thinking about all these plays all night. So you want to see things first thing in the morning on tape, how they actually look.
There's no – the night before, you play through the potential opportunities in your mind, and the night of the game, you play it 10 times.
Replay it back.
It drives
all the time.
You insane. And you're hoping, a lot of cases, that the film is better than the way you remember it.
And it always
and vice
is
versa
too.
Sometime, right?
It usually always is, too.
All right, we're going to get into the game a little bit and – you know, how you played and the defense along with the offense. You're going to have an opportunity to speak with Barrett Root tonight. Phone numbers, Hillsborough, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free, 800-546-4620. And 800-596-BUCKS-2827. So give us a call. Ask Barrett Root some questions. All right, going back really from the beginning of the game, you know, the media today, I listened to some in the car and you saw some things last night. And of course, it's, you know, it's always so high when you win and so low when you lose. Yeah. But if you look initially in that first quarter, at least from where I was sitting and watching, the game plan was executed pretty well. I mean, you guys came out, you had to stop the run. It was no secret to anybody in the whole NFL that they were going to come out and try to run the football.
Yeah.
And the Bucs needed to run the football, use short passes, quick passes. If you were going to take shots down the field, it had to be on first and second down because you couldn't get in a third and long situation against their defense.
Yeah.
And for the most part, you did it. You got a turnover right away. Didn't capitalize opportunity wise, and that's one of the things you made reference to already, being able to get 7 points. You know, you got 3 points, but yet you came back, you stopped the run again to force Batch to throw, and you were certainly conceding to the fact that if you were going to lose a game, it was going to be on Batch's shoulders. You were not going to get beat up on the ground, and he throws a ball, and both of the touchdowns, one that was deflected by Tlaib and the one thrown to Cody, really not very well thrown ball, certainly playable. So was your impression the same of how that whole thing got going?
Oh, no doubt. Like you said, we were fine. And honestly, like you said, even the two touchdowns they caught, we couldn't have been in better position. You know, guys were exactly where they're supposed to be. Both times it was, you know, kind of thrown up, except for Akeeb's that he kind of mishandled, basically. He was.
But he had two hands on it. That's a play you expect him to, you know. And if he was sitting here, we would say, listen, dude, you gotta make that
play.
Well,
and especially him, too. I mean, he's as competitive as it gets, and he knows it. And he's going to make that 9 out of 10 times. And just like the one before with Cody in the other end, Cody's going to make that 9 out of 10 times.
And if he turns over, it might potentially hit him in the chest.
Yeah, it might just catch it like a punt almost. You know, it was two plays that, you know, like I said, most of the time we're going to make those plays. The tough part is, you know, we actually played pretty well and we're down 14-3 now. And you just can't get in that situation with the Steelers. I remember with Bill Cowher, they had some kind of record like 66-3 or 66-1 when they had a lead, you know, going into the third quarter, this fourth quarter, something like that. And they're no different with Mike Tomlin. I mean, as soon as these guys get a lead, you know, their defense is just too tough to come from behind and, you know, and crawl back. You got to play well early. And, I think we kind of panicked a little bit too. I think we tried to do too much, tried too hard to make plays when, you know, a team like that, they're not going to make mistakes. You got to just play, you know, do your job. Do what we've done all week in practice and, you know, slowly chip away. And you know, unfortunately, we couldn't do that.
Yeah, and it's a frustrating thing, and especially on defense, because when you get behind, you feel like you have to make a play. You have to get a turnover, so you take a chance. You know, Akeeb almost picked off another ball and tried to jump in front. Fortunately, the receiver stumbled a little bit, because if he was able to spin out of that and hit it running, and then obviously you're a gap defense, and if you try to do more than your gap, the next thing you know, you get caught out of your gap, and there's a big hole. And as the game went on, you guys, you know, started to get worn down, and that's where they got their running yards. Mm-hmm. But if you focus on, you know, executing, it's a great teaching tape.
Yeah.
Because if you say, okay, if we execute our game plan, this is what happens. Yeah. And if you don't, and you don't make the plays, so you did exactly what you needed to do and expected Batch to throw it, and he threw some bad balls. I mean, the first one, Tlaib, he threw it right to him, and then the other one, the second pick he had in the fourth quarter, I mean, you knew it was going to happen.
Yeah, it was no doubt. And, you know, there's been a saying here for a long time, you know, defensively it's always been it's about us. And this game is a perfect example of that, where there was nothing that they did. I mean, they had a couple of good plays they drew up and whatnot, and that's the NFL. You're going to get a few plays, but, you know, overall, literally 95% of the plays that were made by them, it was something that we did to give it up. You know, it wasn't getting manhandled. It wasn't getting blown back. It was, you know, like you said, when you're 4-3 defense, everybody's got a gap and everybody's got a spot to be, and it was just, you know, guys getting a little bit out of whack or you know, maybe missing a tackle every now and then. So it was really one of those things. It was definitely about us, and it was us not making the plays compared to Pittsburgh making the plays.
Now, you had an opportunity to watch the film. You know, assess how you think you played.
You know what? I was I'd say I was good. You know, I wasn't nothing special, but, you know, nothing bad either. It was just a good game. You know, I think I had three plays. I would have.
Nothing like putting you on the spot.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of those things. Like you said earlier, you replay it over and over in your mind. You're thinking all the things that went wrong. It's never nearly as bad as you think it is. And if you think you played great, it's not quite as good as you think
it is either. No, there's
no question. So, you know, it was watching it today again, there's about three plays I'd really like to have back. Other than that, you know, it was just, you know, like I said, when you're a 4-3 defense, your job is to be where you're supposed to be in your gap, make your reads and make your fits. And when it's time to make a tackle, and then you hustle the ball. So, you know, I was good, but, you know, there's still three plays I'd like to have back, and, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities to make big plays, but, you know, there's, you know, it could have been a little bit better.
I think pressure on the quarterback was an issue. The one that comes to mind is the route down the middle where, you know, Heath Miller crosses your face and they're able to find him down the middle going into the red zone. Yeah. And you kind of passed him off. Is that the backside linebacker?
Well, that was, how was that? That's one of those I'd like to have back too.
Should you have gone with him?
I saw a ghost. You know, I thought I saw a guy flash in front of me.
Coming out of the backfield?
Where I would have passed him off. But that was nothing. That was I saw the wrong thing. So that was one of the plays I'd like to have back, because I basically saw something that wasn't there. I thought I saw a guy flash in front of my face where I would pass him off, and actually the guy was just blocking. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like that.
Well, so many times you've seen the backside guy come over and fill that area, and, you know, and take that away where the safety still stays over the top, and you know, and even with the touchdown award right before the half, it's kind of, if Batch doesn't have the time to step, you know, take two hitches, step up and buy time, at that point it becomes street ball, and guys, you're not going to cover guys for that long.
You know, there's good and bad with every defense, and as good as the cover two defense is, if you don't have a great rush and the quarterback has too much time, there's going to be somebody open, because, you know, the way we play cover two is we quarterback key. You know, we read the quarterback's eyes. And, you know, everybody was kind of keying into Charlie, and he was looking right, looking right, looking right. And, you know, he pumped it one too many times, then came back late and went left to Hines, who was kind of just running the back of the end zone. So, you know, it's there's every defense is a little give and take. And, you know, unfortunately, when we didn't get home with a rush, he had a little bit too long to you know, look over the defense. And, you know, we probably should have tried to plaster a little earlier. But, you know, hey. Credit them. They made a good play.
Now, are you taught to read the quarterback's eyes and coverage? I mean, you have an area, but we've seen Rondé so often just kind of, you know, fall to where, and Derek Brooks used to do it all the time from the backside. If he wasn't threatened and the quarterback was favoring, next thing you know, he comes from nowhere, picks it off, and he's running.
You know what? You know, in our old defense, everything was reading the quarterback. It was QB key. You know, we said QB key, ball out, break. That's what you did. Now we have a little bit more mixtures. You know, for instance, the play we were talking about earlier, that cover four that Heath Miller caught, you know, that's kind of a combination defense where we're looking at the quarterback, but yet we are passing off routes. And then we also have, you know, more match defenses too, where literally we're kind of playing a match zone where the first guy that comes in, you're almost playing like basketball with him, trying to deny him the ball. So we actually have a lot more of a mixture this year, which I actually really like. I like, you know, being able to mix it up, because, you know, I think offenses are getting so good now that if they know you're always quarterback keying, you know, they're getting so good with pump fakes and, you know, making you, you know, break when they're not going to throw it, that there's too many easy completions with that. And the match defense has been a good change for us.
Well, you're listening to Barrett Rood, and if you guys want to call in and ask him a question, he's here. Hillsboro, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free, there's two of them, 800-546-4620 and 800-596-2827. We're going to take a break right now and come back with more with Barrett Rood on the Total Access Show. This is the Buccaneer Radio Network.
Buccaneers Total Access returns on 620 WDAE and US 1035, the home of the Buccaneers.
Welcome back to the Total Access Show. Today, my guest is Barrett Rood. As we head into the off week, we won't be on next week, but we'll be back after Cincinnati. Probably not going to talk a whole lot about Cincinnati. We'll get to the phones here in a minute. One question I did want to ask, and it was pretty glaring yesterday, was passing situations. You stopped the run exactly like you wanted to do. You're going to force Batch to throw the ball. What happened to the middle push that we saw the first couple weeks?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. It was it definitely wasn't quite the same. Usually, you know, the rush to me is not measured in sacks or even quarterback hits. It's just you feel the rush. You know, you feel that the quarterback just doesn't have any time. And for whatever reason, yeah, we just didn't get that same push. And, you know, that's on all of us too. You know, not only the D-line, you know, when linebackers get a chance to blitz, you know, we got to make something happen. And, you know, I not only the rush, but we got to contain the quarterback too. You know, that one scramble that Charlie had, I think it was the second quarter, first or second quarter, I'm not sure, but it was a big play. You know,
and he came right up the middle.
Yeah, right up the middle, and there was nobody there.
But the rush got up the field.
Yeah.
and he had the opportunity to step up. And so many times last year, that was a big problem on third down. You know, teams were completing third and 12 because the quarterback would drop back, the rush would get up the field, and they'd take two or three hitches waiting on those deep routes. And you guys can only cover them for so long.
Exactly. And, you know, that's something that, you know, even though you don't like to see plays like that happen, it's great learning tape for us because we have a young D-line, and we'll see. You know, it's only the third game of the year, and we'll see that, hey, you know, even though we're rushing hard, somebody's got to be able to, you know, loop around and contain the guy because, like you said, even a 35-year-old quarterback can go 20 yards if nobody's within, you know, anywhere near him on a rush.
Some open area.
Yeah.
But when these guys rush, do they have lane responsibilities? I know it's different in passing situations. You run a lot of stunts and crosses and TEs and ETs and whatever you want to call them. But ultimately, they have to line up in a gap, correct? Or do they not?
Well, you know, they do. They are in a gap. But I think that the biggest thing is knowing a lot of times when we get upfield, everybody's rushing hard. We don't, like, have contained rushes, whereas, like, you know, guys are kind of just bull rushing and looking. It's more everybody's getting off, you know, hard going for the quarterback. But somebody has to be able to feel it when they're past the quarterback's level and wrap around and come underneath to basically contain for that scramble. And that's the thing we didn't do actually a couple times. You know, we're getting up and actually getting decent rushes up the field, but we have to have one or two guys feel that they're getting past the quarterback and loop around and come underneath and contain the scrambles up the middle.
We saw Price do that a few times against Carolina, and you don't want to do it with the blitz because, you know, people listening, the toughest thing about bringing blitzes, well, where are the guys going to come from? They're going to come from your coverage. So you're going to avoid areas of the field to try to generate pressure, and good quarterbacks are going to find those receivers in those areas.
Yeah.
So ultimately, you'd like to generate pressure with the four guys, you know, even three sometimes if you can get away with it. And if it's a good quarterback that likes to scramble, you can spy him or do something else.
Yeah.
But that's something, you know, I would have expected to see a little more of.
Yeah, you know, no doubt. I mean, and, you know, like I said, it's going to be great. It's going to be great tape to learn from because, you know, when you get bitten like that, you know, it's going to be a note of emphasis. I'm sure, you know, all of our coaches on the defensive side are going to, you know, take note of that because it's not only the D-line. You know, linebackers, when we blitz, we can't just fly upfield. You know, if we're getting past the quarterback's level, we got to come back, recontain, and be ready to make a play on him on a scramble.
All right, we're going to go to phones, take a couple calls. First off, we have Rob in Sarasota. Do you have a question for Barrett?
Yeah, Barrett, listen, I'm a longtime Buccaneer fan going back to the days of the 70s. And I got to be honest, guy, I respect the Buccaneers, but yesterday's play on the field was embarrassing as a fan. And I want to ask you, as a leader on that defense, what you think you can do better as a leader on this team so that we don't have an embarrassment like that again. And I'm off and I'll listen.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things that it shows when you play, you know, the elite teams in the NFL that you have to be on the top of your game. And it wasn't, you know, like we said earlier, it wasn't getting manhandled. It was just little details. And when you have a chance to make a play against a team like Pittsburgh, you have to go ahead and make it. And, you know, we gave up two early touchdowns on plays that we're going to make 9 out of 10 times. Obviously, they're pretty routine plays for us. So, I think it's just a combination of being more detailed and you know, basically just taking, you know, taking your chance and making a play when you get that chance. There's not a whole lot to be said about it. It's more just, hey, you know, be detailed in your work during the week. And when you get a chance to make a play during the game, you know, it is the NFL, you know, you got to make that play. So, there's not going to be a lot to be said. It's just, you know, guys just need to know that when you're not in the details against a really good team like that, you're gonna get handed to them.
And it seems like that explanation is so simple, and people are like, well, you know, Tony Dungy used to have a great quote, and he's saying, just be a professional. Well, well, what is that? And he defined it as, professional is knowing what to do and doing it. Well, is that it? I mean, there's nothing more than that, but he's like, you would be surprised. A lot of people know what to do, and they don't have, you know, don't have the means to do it physically as a player. Mm-hmm. Some know what to do and choose not to do it just because they're selfish. And you said the rest of the people don't have a clue and they're not here very long. But I thought it was a great definition because it's not as complicated as it seems. Certainly, the score is not good. It's bad.
Yeah.
And if you don't watch the football game, and the many people in the Tampa area didn't have an opportunity to see it, so of course it looks awful. But it really just comes down to a few plays. And when you have the opportunity, you have to make them. And if you don't, a team like Pittsburgh is going to take advantage of it. And there's no question about it. We said it going into the half. The last thing you want to do against Pittsburgh Steelers is be trying to catch up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they were putting six guys on a line of scrimmage. So you have five blockers and a back.
Yeah.
So they would put six guys there, two defensive linemen and four linebackers. And on the snap of the ball, all six of them would take one step forward.
Yeah.
And then two of them would back out. So what you do is you eat up all the offensive linemen and you get an oversized linebacker one-on-one with your back every time. How are you going to win that? Because the offensive lineman can't drop out to help Cadillac or Ernest Graham. So you have a mismatch every time.
Yeah.
So you don't want to – the best thing to do is just not be in that situation. When you're behind, everybody knows you have to throw. So that's where it gets ugly and the wheels start to fall off the wagon.
There's definitely reasons why Pittsburgh's very good in that lead position.
Well, if you want to call Bear Root, ask a question. Hillsborough County, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free, there's two of them, 800-546-4620 and 800-596-BUCKS-2827. We're going to take another call. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, we're going to go to Rick in Newport Richey.
Hey, how you doing, Barrett?
Hey, doing great.
Great. Well, first of all, I'd like to wish you guys best of luck on the rest of the season. I've got a question regarding what's going on first downs. I mean, it seems like teams going back to last game against Carolina, even yesterday, they were getting a lot of yardage on first downs on the run. I mean, I just want to hang up and I'll hang up the list. And it seems like they're getting, like I said, a lot of yardage on first down on rushing. Is there anything in particular that you guys are doing that teams are seeing that they're running on first down and getting so much yardage on first down?
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. It's in the Carolina game, basically we just had a couple misfits. And like we've been saying earlier, when you're a 4-3 defense, everybody's got one gap, and you have to be in that gap. And when the ball comes that way, you have to get off and make a tackle. And, the first against Carolina, there was two or three probably running plays that kind of leaked through. But in the second half, we kind of made the adjustments that everybody sort of saw the same thing, what was going on, and we fixed it really quick. Against Pittsburgh, we started off really well on first down, actually. But as the game progressed, there was kind of the same thing. We just got a little out of whack with where we were supposed to be. And, credit them. They did a good job of, their back ran hard, and he broke a tackle or two. And, it was honestly, though, first down, I don't think killed us yesterday. It was giving up big plays and not getting off on third down more than anything. But, definitely just when you do see a little bit of yardage given up on the run on first down, it's usually an issue with run fits.
All right, we got another caller. We got Brad in Bradenton.
How you doing, guys?
Hey, doing great.
Good, good. Hey, I had a couple questions. The first one, when you saw big Brent Keisel running like he did, I mean, what are you guys thinking on the sideline?
Well, honestly, what I thought is, the Steelers, I think, have had their starters intact on the defensive side, at least about six or seven of them for forever. And, I mean, I remember Brent Keisel when I was in college, so he's been there forever. And I was actually surprised at how well he moved for a defensive lineman. So, I was impressed with how athletic he was, honestly.
Sure. And my second question, is James Harrison, is he for real? I mean, it looked like he was coming after it every down. And I don't know how you do that in this heat, wearing them black jerseys and all that stuff. I mean, is he really for real?
Well, I think he was Defensive Player of the Year
a couple years ago.
So I would say he's definitely for real.
And he's short, and he's as wide as he is tall, and he has, like, leverage before he even gets out of his stance. He's tough duty.
He's a good player, man. You know what?
He's
not
strong.
Only that, he plays in the punt team, and I remember I played him in 2006 when he was on special teams, and he was one of the best special teams guys I can ever remember. So he's been a good player for a long time, and he's continuing to play well. So if he was in a black jersey, white jersey, yellow jersey, I think he would have played well no matter what, because he's been pretty consistent for the last at least 3 or 4 years.
He's a hard guy to get under just because he's low.
Yeah, he's
different. You have a 6'6" offensive lineman trying to block him, and he's 260 pounds, and you just can't get low enough. So he's good with his hands, and he's strong, and it makes it very difficult to get a hold of the guy. And then if a back does get on him, he just overpowers him because he's so
he's pretty unique, so strong.
Yeah, yeah, he's got
you don't see a lot of guys like that.
And that's a guy that you wouldn't think would be drafted because they don't fit the mold of, you know, that kind of thing. He's an anomaly, is what you would say, coming out of college.
Yeah.
But Kiesel running down the field, the first thing I was thinking is he's a nose guard. Can somebody catch him or a defensive end, you know? And I guess I did listen to Raheem's explanation because we did during the broadcast say, you know, Freeman did a good job getting down there to slow the guy down. Where's the rest of the posse to come get him on the ground? But because it was at the line of scrimmage, because he caught it going the other way, and all the offensive linemen, because it was a quick screen, were setting up for Sammy Strader, that they're just, they're, you know, guys were running, but they were so far they didn't even show up on the film.
Yeah, one thing, you know, one thing Pittsburgh does about as good a job as anybody for is blocking for defensive players on interceptions or fumbles. You know, for instance, the Super Bowl, when James Harrison scored that 100-yard interception return, I mean, there was a wall of guys leading him in there. And you saw, I mean, Josh did a great job actually trying to slow him down.
But
There was three or four guys that were, you know, going at him, trying to block him. And, you know, so Pittsburgh does a really good job of blocking for their guys when they do get picks.
Okay, if you want to call and ask Barrett, have a comment, question, phone numbers, Hillsborough, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free, there's two of them, 800-546-4620 and 800-596-BUCKS, 2827. We're going to go back. We got one more caller, George in St. Pete.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
Hey, you're doing great.
Got a question. The fans that were there, okay, how does that affect you guys when you're in your own home and you have all those, it seems like the majority of the obnoxious Pittsburgh fans? I mean, how does that make you guys feel on the sidelines hearing them cheer every 2 seconds?
Well, you know, I don't think it affects our play at all. You know, it would be nice to if we could get a little more pewter and red in there to get rid of some of that black and gold I kept seeing. But, you know, it doesn't affect our play at all. But, you know, there were a lot of Pittsburgh fans there. There was a lot of terrible towels out. And, you know, they've traveled well for a long time. So we expected that, too. It's very similar to Green Bay or Chicago or New York or Dallas. You know, a lot of those teams travel really well. And we expected to see a lot of Steelers fans down here. And they, they definitely came in waves.
I'm going to shift gears just for a second. One thing I've wanted to ask one of the players, you get the coaches stand through the media and stuff like that. How much of a distraction and effect did Tenard not being there play on you guys in preparation last weekend in the game?
You know, in all honesty, not a ton. It was
not a ton. Is that a little bit?
Well, just for the fact that, you know, the same thing happened last year. You know what I mean? We didn't have Tenard for four games last year and kind of had to go about that on the fly also. So I was actually pretty shocked when I heard the news because I had no idea that he was going to be suspended. So I heard about that on whatever it was, Monday or Tuesday or Wednesday, whatever it was. But, yeah, so I was pretty surprised by it to hear it. But once that got out, you know, Cody Grimm, he's going to surprise a lot of people. He really is. He's not as good an athlete as Tenard is, but he's very instinctual like that. He has just a great feel for football. And, you know, like that play in the end zone, he's going to make that more times than not. He's not going to be a liability out there by any means. So I'm expecting big things from him throughout the year because he's really got a natural feel for football.
Yeah, and the most frustrating thing being a player when stuff like that happens is once they make the announcement, you got to have to field questions all week about that rather than the Pittsburgh Steelers and how you're going to attack it. It's all about that. And, you know, it's a shame because the difference in the two programs, you know, it's not like he didn't know he was going to be tested. So that's a shame. He's, you know, you have a young football team to start with, and then you let down your teammates like that. And me, if it was me in that shoes, in his shoes, you know, I would feel more disappointed in myself that I let down all my teammates because you guys work so hard and you defied all the odds. You get to 2-0. And now you have to deal with that.
Yeah, and, you know, Tenard's a very, very likable guy. He's a guy that is very, you know, a lot of friends in the team. Everybody gets along with him. But, you know, it was frustrating just for the fact that, you know, he knew what would happen if he did get in trouble with that. And, you know, and I feel for him, too, because, hey, not only he let us down, but, you know, this is a big career.
Oh, he's going to – no, it's going to –
a lot of opportunities that he just let go here, too. So I hope he can get it all straightened out and get back and hopefully get his career back on track. Because this is a big blow to his career that was really going well too.
And back to Cody, we listened to Raheem Morris's comments in the show before. Initially, to me, watching him up in the box doing a game, that he was a little out of whack because of the speed of the game. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like he was trying to go through his reads, but everything was happening so fast he was a little bit behind.
Yeah.
But then as the game went on, you can see him getting to the line of scrimmage quicker. You can see him getting depth faster. It's almost like the speed kind of overwhelmed him at first. When you watched the film, did you kind of see it the same way?
Exactly. You know, I just think back to myself when I first went in there as a rookie. You're exactly right.
Everything's a blur.
Especially that first, 10 plays, you're like, what is going on? And I remember, cover two, we played a lot of cover two back then. I said, whatever I'm going to do, I'm not going to get beat down the middle. So a lot was going on in front of me. I knew one thing that was not going to happen. I was not going to get beat down the middle. So that was my mindset. But then, once you get comfortable and, it's kind of like, even as a veteran, I'm pretty nervous before games. I'm real nervous before games, but that first hit goes, and I'm fine. I can go play. It's like practice again. But with a rookie, usually it takes 2-3 series to kind of calm down, and then you're like, okay, this is just football again. It's just everybody's just a little bit better. So it just takes a little bit longer to
focus.
Calm down.
But yeah, there's no question that once you get hit. But I played 220 games, and I think I was nervous for every single one.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no doubt.
Even the ones I knew I was only playing six plays. I don't know what it is. All right, we're going to go back to the phones. We have James in Clearwater.
Hello. Got a question for Barrett about linebacker play. I coach linebackers over at Dunedin High School, and I was just wondering, what are some of the first things I need to teach, like the Sam, the Mike, and Will in the 4-3 set?
Do you have about an hour?
Yeah. I can get pretty detailed with you if I need to.
Man, I wish we did.
You know what? The first thing I would say is teach them the right footwork. I think before anything, your feet have to be in the right place, your eyes and your feet. So I'd have them, tuned into what you want them to key or what you want them to be looking at before the snap. And being able to read off that. So, your eyes and your feet got to work together right away or else you never have a chance. So, definitely the first thing you want to do is, go over what you want them to look at, whether it's, the Sam linebacker looking at the tight end, whether it's the Will linebacker looking at the fullback or the guard or however you want them to key. Have them work on taking steps off their keys because, if they're in the right position, then they can, even if they don't have great technique, their athleticism can take over, and at least they're in the right spot. And more mistakes with linebacking happens when you're just out of whack from the start. You're not looking at your right keys, and your feet are in the wrong. You're taking yourself out of the play before it even starts. So I'd say before you do anything, I'd have them honed in to what they're supposed to be looking at before the snap, and have them move in the right direction right off the bat.
All right, we're going to talk a little bit more about linebackers and middle linebackers specifically, but we have to take a break. And before we go to break, if you want to ask Barrett Root a question, phone numbers, Hillsborough, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free, 800-546-4620 and 800-596-BUCKS, 2827. We'll be right back with the Total Access Show. This is the Buccaneer Radio Network.
Access continues on 620 WDAE and US 1035. Here again is your host, Dave Moore.
Our guest today, Barrett Rood. If anybody wants to call in, give a call, ask Barrett a question. The last caller was talking about linebacker play. Wanted to know a little bit about it. And the last couple years, you've had to make a couple transitions. When you came in to the Bucs organization, you middle linebacker, which includes the Tampa 2. And people that are listening, a very brief description is the middle linebacker is responsible for stopping a run up the middle and being able to cover the middle of the field in pass coverage with some of the best receivers in the NFL to be able to get down and play basically the middle third of the field. And when you switch systems, you went to Bates' system and then back, and now people are saying, well, maybe you're not as physical as you should be as a middle linebacker. And I start listening to a lot of these comments, and I was here when Monty Kiffin got here. And Hardy Nickerson was the guy they bought in, and they had Jamie Duncan and Shelton Quarles and guys that came in, but none of those guys were the type of linebackers like your Pepper Johnsons, your Ted Johnsons, the guys, the big old school Carl Mecklenburg, I'm going to blow you up and knock the back 3 yards back. Because the type of guy that fits into the system that you guys run has to be able to do both those things. Mm-hmm. You know, you see Ray Lewis on the first Monday night game, and they're saying, man, a guy, and you know what? The guy's a great player, and he's a stud. But I don't think he can turn around and cover the middle of the field like you're required to do and be able to take on fullbacks and knock a back back in the backfield. Mm-hmm. You know, you see Geno Hayes hit those gaps and get that guy when he's running away or on an angle. But you're at a disadvantage because you're in the middle of the field. So everything that's coming at you is downhill. And you're responsible for a gap. And when you have a lead blocker, you have to spill, which means you have to direct the runner.
Yeah.
So you don't have opportunities like that. What do you have to say when they say you don't play as physical as some of these old school guys?
You know what? And like you said, I think the old school middle inside linebacker is almost extinct, in all honesty. I mean, you just don't see a Ted Johnson or a
Pepper Johnson. I played fullback against like Jack Del Rio.
It was
just
different.
He was 260 pounds.
Yeah.
I mean, he was –
Yeah,
know.
I mean, they just don't – I mean, even, you know, even like a Brian Urlacher is a 260-pound guy, but he's a – He's a run.
He's a runner.
Athlete.
He'd rather chase it down
and
take it
he's
on.
He's an athlete first. And, you know, I remember my college coach, Coach Ted Johnson, and he showed me film with Ted Johnson, and I was just like, what? I mean, is this what every linebacker does? And I realized that, no, it's not. I mean, it's there was a few skullcrackers back then left. But now, I mean, I don't know if I can think of any. I mean, Ray Lewis is – even him, he's kind of a sideline-to-sideline guy more than he is just a thump guy, you know. And that old school, you know, just one gap, just thump guy is kind of extinct because you have to cover now. And I think most middle linebackers want to be three down linebackers. They don't want to play first down and jog off the field. So, you know, that's my thing is I like being able to do everything. I want to be able to stop the run, but yet stay on the field and third down and cover guys and do all that stuff too, because I don't want to play one down and jog off the field. And that's kind of, I think more, you know, the John Vilmas, the Beasons, the Willises, those guys.
All the smaller guys that can run.
Yeah, those are the guys that are you know, kind of.
And the Ted Johnsons were two-gap guys, so they would take you on. I hated it when I played fullback because I like guys that would pick a side because it made it easier, you know. But, man, they would come and just – and that's why I guess he's struggling the way he is.
It's just –
concussions.
I mean, it was a different world back then. I mean, those guys, I've seen him at, you know, the Senior Bowl. I mean, all those old New York linebackers, Gary Reasons and Pepper Johnson and – Harry Carson, I mean, they're enormous. You know, they're huge guys, and like you said, they were they split right down the middle. And there's not, I don't know if there's anybody left that does that anymore.
No, I wouldn't imagine. There's not too many. Well, systems don't. I remember Levon Kirkland.
Yeah,
you know, he played for the Steelers. He was about 280, but they would take him out every other down.
Yeah,
I mean, he was only a between the tackle guy. But do you don't have any trouble taking on downhill runs or
no? I mean, it's, you know, like I said, if I had to go in and two gap guards, that's a little different story. But I don't know if any linebacker's doing that anymore. You know, it just you know, I have no problem taking on a fullback and maintaining my side and stopping the run inside. You know, it's in a 4-3 defense. It's about everybody controlling your gap, and there's not many times where they're going to ask you to two-gap guys. And actually, when we are asked to two-gap, it's usually by speed. It's having an A-gap and a backside B-gap or an A-gap and a backside C-gap. So you play it by kind of basically juking linemen instead of taking them on. You have to play this gap but kind of be ready to move back and fall back.
So they teach you to kind of do that rather than trying to run through the guy?
Well, yeah, because, you know, it's one of those things. Usually,
genetically, you're at a disadvantage.
A little bit. And, you know, it's harder, especially when you got a running back who's cutting in space. It's easier to try to juke around a lineman and get to that running back than it is to try to, you know, stone a lineman and play right through him. Exactly. So, you know, a lot of times we're trying to, you know, avoid getting touched by linemen so we can two gap and make plays on running backs in space.
Another thing I think fans really don't, and often in the media, you know, when you hear the term middle linebacker, you think they're all the same.
Yeah.
You know, like tight end. Well, Kellen Winslow and I, we're both tight ends.
Yeah.
Very different.
Yeah.
I couldn't go out in space and do what he does as a slot receiver.
Yeah.
But he certainly didn't want to go down there and block seven techniques all day for Mike Allstott like I did.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
but yet you're both tight ends. And unfortunately, a lot of times they lump, you know, certain positions together, assuming they're all the same. But yet a lot of times guys are specific system type guys. Uh-huh. And I think that's where a lot of the confusion falls when you describe and compare players from team to team. And that's why a lot of times when you see free agents move from team to team, they seem to disappear because they're not asked to do the same thing, or they're asked to do more than what they were really good at, and they get lost because they don't necessarily fit in all the systems.
Yeah, no doubt. I think, you know, middle linebacker, I grew up, I've gotten
Well, you come from a long lineage of
– Yeah, I mean, I was
– Your whole family of linebackers? Well, tell us who played where.
Let's see, I got a – as far as the linebackers, I got a dad that played – he played all three linebackers, actually. He was a middle linebacker in college but played all three.
Where did he play?
He played in Nebraska, then played at Buffalo, and then Cincinnati. And then I got an uncle. I got two uncles that played linebacker. One in college, one played for the Jets also. And then I got my brother, who played outside linebacker.
Is he still playing or no? He went to New England, right?
He was in New England, Cleveland, and he was actually here for about a week.
So if anybody knows how to play linebacker, probably.
We got good genes for it.
At least you had to let the right people ask the questions, right? All right, we're running out of time. Give Barrett Root a call. Ask a question. Phone number is Hillsboro, 813-990-4620. Pinellas, 727-461-4620. Toll free, 800-546-4620. And 800-596-BUCKS. That's 596-2827. Okay, we do have a couple callers. Let's go to Joe in Tampa.
Hey, Barrett. How are you?
Hey, Joe. How's it going?
Good. Hey, by the way, thank you for the years of service to Tampa. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to say, thanks to the internet, I was able to watch the game yesterday, and I was really impressed with the offense. Going up against the Steelers defense, I thought we moved the ball pretty well, and we got the ball several times into the Steelers territory, 40, 45-yard line. It seemed to stall. But just moving the ball, I was happy to see that with the young offense. Now, personally, I didn't care for the punting game, but I don't want to put you on the spot to talk about that. I was going to talk about Grimm, but you talked about him earlier. So let me ask you about I saw Richard Mendenhall, and next to all these Pittsburgh linemen, you know, they're monsters, and here's Mendenhall. Is there much truth to the fact that some of these smaller backs get lost in the offensive schemes?
You know what, Joe?
That's a good question.
It is pretty good. And Mendenhall, he's – and don't get me wrong. Pittsburgh's,
he's not a small guy.
He's not a real small back. I mean, Pittsburgh's offensive linemen, no doubt, they were huge. I mean, it was one of the bigger lines I've played against. But the guys who get lost are like, I don't know if you've seen Darren Sproles play, who's 5'6".
Right.
I'm trying to think of another guy. I'm sure Dave probably remembers Barry Sanders, who was my favorite player growing up.
He wasn't that small. His legs were twice
a year. Yeah, Maurice Jones-Drew is a guy that looks like Barry Sanders. He's 5'6", but he weighs probably 215. So he's a big guy, but he's short. And sometimes little guys like that, they can get a little lost behind the, you know, in
so
piles.
So you have trouble spotting them as you're trying to get through gaps and stuff?
You know what? It's not so much then. It's kind of when they, you know, get bumped into the back of a pile. Sometimes that's when you don't see him. You know, if Steven Jackson comes downhill, you're going to see where he is, or Adrian Peterson. But sometimes the shorter guys can get lost behind, you know, behind bodies at times, especially when there's big pileups.
I got an example, like a Warrick Dunn.
Yeah.
See, Warrick Dunn would run low, and he would kind of curl down.
Yeah.
And I remember blocking a defensive end, and we were kind of pushing on each other, and he literally went right between us. And the defensive end stopped and started laughing. He's like, did you just see that? He was lost behind a pile, exactly what you said, and he was able to spin around. But because he was so low, he just spurted out the other side. I mean, it would have been great to get a clip of it on video.
Yeah.
He just disappeared. But I often wondered with linebackers, especially safeties, coming from depth. I mean, you're running full speed.
Yeah.
And you're trying to see where this guy goes. And if he dips down going like he's going to cut back, and you play that and he winds up getting lost coming back out the front side, you can't see around those big guys.
No, exactly. And when you get little pileups, or, you know, when a defensive tackle is taking on a double team and all you see is two black jerseys – like you said, if you have a little short running back and he goes right behind him, they do get lost for a second. And that's where, you know, sometimes you got to be able to anticipate where you think he's going to cut because, like you said, you can't see him.
It could be good or bad,
though. Yeah, exactly. But that's where you got to err on being on the side.
That's the fair advantage. You should be. I mean, if you wait, it's over. He's already gone. If he comes out of there,
exactly.
You're not going to catch him. All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Janine and Valrico.
Wow. Thanks. Hi, Barrett. It's nice to meet you.
Hi, Janine.
Hi. I just have a question and a comment. My question is, with all due respect, as a fan watching the game yesterday on TV, I drove down to Fort Myers, and I got a sense that in the fourth quarter, again, no disrespect, I felt like you guys were playing like you were already defeated, and I was wondering if that is accurate or if you got that same sense or if that happens to you sometimes. And my comment is, I want you to remember, please, that whether the stadium's half full or three-quarters full, you have a whole bunch of people out here who can't afford tickets but drive out of the city to see you win or lose. And I'll shut up and let you answer.
Well, thank you, Janine. That does mean a lot. And we do know that. We do know that we've met so many good people around here, and we enjoy meeting. You know, I enjoy meeting all the fans that come up and say hi to me. So we definitely do appreciate that. And, you know, to answer your question, you know, I think there's, you know, some fairness to that question, Janine, and I think more than anything, it was just a frustration level. I don't think we had, by no means had we given up, but we were extremely frustrated. And that's one thing, you know, with a young team too, you have to keep reminding them, hey, you know, it's a whole process. You know, everything you do is evaluated. Everything you do is put on film. And even though there was a lot of guys who, you know, and after winning two games, you know, your expectations rise too. You expect to play really well. And when you don't play like you want to, you know, frustration happens. And, you know, what I tried to get across was, hey, you know, every single play is evaluated. And, you know, the people that are watching, you know, we call it the eye in the sky. You know, the film never lies. And it doesn't matter if you're down by 20 points and it's the fourth quarter or whatever. You have to play the exact same way you did when it was 0-0 to start the game. So, you know, I think there was some truth in what you said, that the guys, you know, there was some frustration going out there. There's by no means were they quitting, but there was a lot of frustration, and we just had to reemphasize that, hey, it doesn't matter what the score is. You got to play the exact same way every time.
Is that something Raheem addresses? I mean, if he sees guys,
oh yeah,
you know, obviously not finishing. And I guess the only place you would really see that clearly would be the end of plays where the guys are pursuing and finishing, especially on defense.
Yeah, you know, and there was no lack of effort at all. It was more of a matter of, you know, sometimes you get frustrated. You see the personal foul penalties start coming up, extra pushing and shoving. And guys sometimes, you know, like I said earlier, they start not doing their job. They start trying to take chances. And that's what happens with frustration. You just start, okay, I need to make something happen. And they go out of their gap, try to make a play, and that's when you see a big run break. And, you know, that's where you just have to, hey, you know, just focus on your process, because you can't play any different now that you're down 20 as opposed to when you know, the game just started. So, you know, there was definitely a high frustration level, though, at the end of the game.
Do they still grade loafs?
Oh, yeah. Loafs are graded hard now.
Well, explain how plays get graded.
Okay. Well,
I mean, is it like a letter grade, or is it a plus, minus, or a loaf?
You know, there's a whole chart. There's a plus on technique.
So it's like a test.
Yeah, it's like we have 75 tests every single week. So continually being graded, and you know, they grade hard too. I mean, if you know, it's not like, okay, you did your job, that's a plus. You know, you have to do your job and do your technique perfectly, be in the right spot. You know, and we get, you know, not only tackles, it's bad tackles too. So we get credit for a tackle, but if we say we make a tackle and
it's
a guy
an ugly tackle,
you know, a guy kind of falls forward for 3 yards and you grab his foot when you should have just made a clean tackle, that's a bad tackle. So we get graded
down on it.
It's like we kind of have the teacher that nobody wanted in high school. You know, the one that gets the hard. You got a C and you did a good job, but you know, that's good. That it raises your standard and you know, it makes you work a little harder.
Yeah, as tight ends, we had the plus minus for a long time, and then we had the actual letter grade. So if I had a good block, it was an A. But if I blocked him, he didn't make the tackle, but technique was horrible, it would be a C. We got to go to break again. We'll be back with Barrett Rood to finish up here on the Total Access Show. This is the Buccaneer Radio Network.
You're listening to Buccaneers Total Access. This is 620 WDAE and US 1035, the home of Buccaneers football.
Welcome back. Finishing up with Barrett Rood, talking about grades. So what is your average? I mean, would you say you're an A, B, C student right now?
kind of ends up being a percentage, I guess.
So what does it equate to?
Well, my first game I was a 90%. Second game I was 88%. I haven't got my grade for this game yet. But, yeah, I mean, basically for me, if I'm in the 90%, that's a pretty good game. That means I was doing what I was supposed to do. I mean,
assuming we're grading on 100.
Yeah, right? And the coach is not going to give you 100 either. It doesn't matter. I remember Gus Bradley one time. I had a game where I did not make a mistake. It was in my mind about a perfect game. Right. He had two like minuses on there that were just completely made up.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I didn't have a perfect
game. That
goes
back to it's never as good as it seems or as bad as it seems, right? All right, we got the bye week coming up, and then we have Cincinnati. I'm not taking any snaps anymore. You guys have Cincinnati. Well, what do you got planned for this week? What is Raheem Morris laid out? What are you going to try to work on? And on top of that, we all know that young guys, and you have a lot of them, feel the momentum of the up and down.
Yeah.
Last week they're saying, can this team make the playoffs?
Yeah.
This week saying, hey, the wheels completely fell off.
Yeah.
This team's awful. Are they even going to be able to win another game?
Yeah.
What do you say to the young guys, along with the five other questions?
You know, it's just about the process, you know, and I think this game will be a good lesson to us because, you know, it just shows when you're not on top of your game against the good teams, it's just not going to be pretty. And, the first two games, you know, we played well. We didn't play great by any means. We just we did enough to get wins. And, I think when we're going to start playing the Atlanta Falcons, the Saints, you know, the teams that are kind of the elite of the NFC, and we play those teams, you know, you got to be on top of your game, and you can't go in there expecting just to get wins by showing up. So, I think more than anything with us, especially being a young team, you know, we got to rely on being able to improve each week. And, a great example of that is I remember in 2000, I believe it was 2008, the Atlanta Falcons were coming off a terrible year. And the first game we played them, we beat them pretty handily. I didn't think much of them. We played them again the week 15, and it was a totally different football team, and they ended up making the playoffs. So when you got a young team like that, and with a young quarterback, young nucleus, you got to be able to just improve each week. And by the time November, December comes along, you got to be able to just play your best football then.
Well, you certainly have a great teaching tape from this one to show how to do it and how not to do it. A lot of young talent, but, how do you try to get better over the next, 10 days?
You know, from what I've heard from Raheem, actually, he was walking into his radio show about an hour ago. We're going to do a little bit of a good on good, which is like, it will be good for us because that's basically just working on what we need to work on.
Fundamentals,
our assignments defensively, our technique defensively, what they need to do offensively, and, it'll be good. It's just kind of a technique review thing and sharpening up, little mistakes we've made. And that's kind of what the buys me for. A combination, get healthy, even on week three. I mean, everybody still feels good, which is why I'm frustrated with this buy. But, it will be a nice opportunity for us to work on little things that we won't be able to work on in a game plan week.
In my opinion, this is where, after a big loss, when you had some momentum, you find out what kind of football team you have. Especially with young guys. That's why he didn't give you a whole lot of credit going into the season. You got a lot of young guys. Yeah. Will they respond quickly?
Oh, well, we'll respond. I mean, I think we got a lot of high character young guys. That's a good thing. We got a lot of competitive, high character young guys, and they'll get it together, and I think we're going to bounce back nicely.
Any big plans for the bye week?
I'm gonna try to play golf a little bit. I can't make it back to Husker Nation and watch my Huskers are out of bye week, so I'm going to stay down here and play a little golf and hopefully break 90. So we'll see.
Well, thank you for listening to the Total Access Show. You have the Gerald McCoy Show tomorrow night, and we'll be off next week. Thank you, Jeff Ryan. Thanks, fans, for listening. And hopefully, when we come back after Cincinnati, things are good. So, one more time, good night. And this is the Buccaneer Radio Network.
Been listening to Buccaneers Total Access on 620 WDAE and US 103.5, the home of Buccaneers football.